now, here is the Old Mole's Bill Resnick to talk with Mark Weisbrot about whether China's economic growth has raised global living standards. Bill.
Hi, thanks, Clayton. Mark Weisbrot, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks, great to be with you.
Mark Weisbrot is a co-founder, co-director of the Center for Economic Policy and Research. Near every week you see his op-eds and articles in the left and also the establishment press. His books include Failed, What the Experts Got Wrong About the Global Economy, and with Dean Baker, Social Security, the Phony Crisis. Recently, he and others at the Center for Economic Policy and Research, they released a study, The Scorecard on Development, 1960 to 2016, China and the Global Economic Rebound. It agrees that economic growth in the developing world did rebound, and in fact, substantially grew in the period 2000 through 2016. But as to the reasons for the recent growth spurt, the study challenges the standard explanation that it was the result of U.S.-led neoliberal globalization, that in fact, they conclude, it was almost entirely from China and its very different model of development strategies. Mark, before we get to your study, I have a couple of caveats. One, that expanding economic growth as it is measured does not mean that all ships rise, that life gets better for most people, like in this country, in fact. But we'll get to that later. First, Mark Weisbrot, tell us about your challenge to the conventional wisdom about development and growth.
Well, you could start with like President Obama's last speech at the UN, where he said, over the last 25 years, the number of people living in extreme poverty has been cut from nearly 40% of humanity to under 10%. Now, these are World Bank numbers, and there's a lot of dispute over them, but nonetheless, just taking those at face value, Obama has tried to say, well, this is the success of the globalization, and the particular form of globalization that Washington promoted over these past 25 years, which includes indiscriminate opening up to trade, international trade and capital flows, deregulation, including financial deregulation, abandoning the industrial and development policies that countries, that almost every developing country used to have back in the 1970s, and making central banks independent, the whole what we usually call neoliberal policies. But then when you look at this poverty reduction that he refers to, actually two-thirds of it was in China, and the net poverty reduction, that is. And if you go back further from 1981 to 2010, China accounted for 94% of the net poverty reduction in terms of people, you know, living below the extreme poverty line. So, again, just taking Obama's statement at face value, looking at the past 25 years, two-thirds of the poverty reduction he's talking about is China. And then the other third, China had a lot to do with that as well, because during that period, especially from 1990 to the peak in 2013, the low and middle income countries, developing countries, sent an increasing amount of exports to China as it grew rapidly to become the largest economy in the world. So their exports to China increased from just a minuscule 0.1% to 2.6% of their GDP during this period.
Hundreds of billions of dollars of increase as a result of trade with China.
That's right. So what Obama and other people are really celebrating is Chinese globalization. That's what's done very well. They multiplied their income per person 21 times since 1980. But their globalization was very, very different from the globalization that President Obama was praising. You know, most of their investment during this period was controlled by the government. They have a huge role still for state-owned enterprises. As recently as 2010, those were 44% of the major industrial companies were state-owned. Foreign investment was very carefully controlled so that it fit in with their overall development plan. They had strict currency controls. They didn't have an independent central bank. That was also controlled by the central government. Their financial system is still state-controlled mostly. And they also, when they got foreign investment, which they did get a lot of, they had what we call performance requirements. They required these foreign companies to transfer technology and to promote exports and to hire local managers and engineers. And so they got something out of the foreign investment. So this is a whole completely different model of development than what, and I don't want to single out Obama. It's, you know, all the media, most of the media and most politicians and even some economists, although economists won't say, you know, if you look for economists, they won't quite make statements like this because they do know the facts. But they haven't been very enthusiastic about stating the actual facts of this neoliberal globalization versus the Chinese globalization that has brought most of the economic progress in the world over the last 25 years.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Mark Weisbrot, co-founder, co-director of the Center for Economic Policy and Research, who released a recent report done with others at the center, The Scorecard on Development 1960-2016, China and the Economic Rebound. Why don't you conclude talking about sort of what those development policies that many third world developing countries used in the 60s and 70s when there was considerable growth. It was the 80s when neoliberalism got the 80s to year 2000 that growth enormously slowed. What are those elements of a development policy as you see it?
Well, there are a lot of what China did on a, you know, China's model isn't exactly applicable, I mean, or completely, because they were transitioning from a more or less completely planned economy to a more mixed economy. But nonetheless, yeah, if you look at the successful years when you did have rapid growth in the vast majority of the developing world in the 60s and 70s, and by the way, I left that out, I'm glad you mentioned it, as the other part of the paper was showing, it was comparing the 21st century to that terrible long-term failure of the neoliberal era from 1980 to 2000 when you had this big slowdown in economic growth and also, a not surprisingly, a slowdown in progress on the social indicators and health indicators, especially like infant and child mortality and adult mortality and education and so on. And that's also documented in our paper. So what did these countries do? Well, they did have planning. They had industrial policies. They had development planning where the government played an active role in trying to move the economy from lower value-added areas of production like agriculture and services to industry and to areas where you had much more rapid productivity growth so that the country could become a developed country. And they also did control their central banks. So the central bank, you know, wouldn't wreck everything else, like, say, the European Central Bank has done in Europe until 2015, after the crisis until 2015. They were playing a very negative role in trying to enforce austerity and things like that that really made things worse. And so these countries had better fiscal and monetary policies, but they didn't do the kind of thing that you're not supposed to do, which is to cut spending during a recession like you saw in Latin America in the 1980s, where they just had a whole lost decade, and then mostly into the 90s had a whole 20 years with very little growth at all in per capita income. So a lot of that was their fiscal and monetary policies were what we call pro-cyclical. That is, they took an economy that was already in recession or was shrinking or slowing and made it worse for years, like you've seen and we've talked about in Greece, for example. So you didn't have those kinds of policies very much at all in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. This really came in with the neoliberal period. And then you had other forms of regulation, of capital flows, of trade.
They had protection of their own industries.
They had definitely a lot of protection.
As China does. This is Mark Weisbrot, Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole, talking to Mark Weisbrot. It seems to me that the model, though, that China has pursued, and in fact the whole idea of growth and what kind of growth we need, it seems to me we're moving into a world where those kinds of figures, even though they're important, they miss the what happens to the bottom 50% of people in these populations. Growth does not trickle down. In fact, a lot of growth leads to the destruction of sort of traditional agriculture, traditional communities, people flowing into big cities, these anonymous, huge places on the outskirts of it, and living there is no picnic, and you can't even grow your own food. It seems to me there's tremendous misery is being created by that growth. And then finally, it's unsustainable. China is the greenhouse gas emitter of the on the top of the world and will remain that way for a long time, even if their promises aren't met for getting rid of coal and having a new energy system. In any event, tell us about that. It seems to me we really have to rethink everything about growth now.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, first of all, I think that growth does, over a longer period of time, growth generally does trickle down. You know, it's a very unusual period that we've had in the U.S. in the past 35 years where you have, well, growth has slowed, but the growth that we had, mostly the income gains meant mostly to the upper 1% or 10% of the income distribution. That, you know, if you look at the whole economic history of the United States, that's a very rare event. I mean, the 30 years prior, you know, the first half of the post-World War II period wasn't like that at all. You had rising living standards. That is much more the norm. If you look at 20 or 30-year period of capitalism, it actually does trickle down quite a bit. In China, it obviously did. I mean, 800 million people were pulled across the poverty line. Now, at the same time, inequality increased enormously in China. It went from one of the most equal developing countries in terms of distribution of income to one of the most unequal. But they grew so fast that they still pulled all these people out of poverty. But they wouldn't have had to grow quite that fast if they just hadn't increased inequality so much. But no, growth is really essential to economic growth. You know, it isn't this terrible thing that most people or a lot of people on the left say it is. If you look at what growth actually is as a matter of accounting, there's two things that contribute to economic growth in any economy. One is population growth. Now that, or labor force growth, but we're just holding labor force participation constant, so we would say population growth. Now, that is destructive to the environment, and it's not a positive thing. But the other part of economic growth is productivity growth. So you're producing more with less labor. And, of course, there are environmental costs to that, but they don't have to be. For example, we could actually greatly increase our growth here in the United States by transforming our infrastructure into a green infrastructure. So we would be actually lowering greenhouse gas emissions at the same time that we increase economic growth. That's just one example.
But there are so many. Mark, I think we have to conclude. It does seem to me, though, that when, in fact, trickle-down did work for a very long time, you had first growth everywhere and labor was needed and labor was in short supply. Or second, you had these governments that were controlled by labor parties, and neither are true right now. And I'm afraid
saying that growth automatically trickles down. Obviously, it doesn't. But
right.
My point is that if you look at long periods of history, and I don't like to use the word trickle down because that's a right wing kind of. I wouldn't say it like that. I would just say that in general, when the economy grows, most or even all, the vast majority of people will gain from that. How much they gain depends on, of course, the balance of forces in the political sphere.
Right. Mark, thanks a lot. It was really good talking to you. Growth is surely necessary for the bottom half of the world population and of productivity, but it's not just stimulating growth. It requires a politics, as you pointed out, and it requires the interventions that lead to that instead of just greater inequality and isolation for those poor people. Mark, you're terrific. Thanks a lot for talking to us. Thanks for your studies, and thanks to the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
Thank you for having a great show.
Right. Thanks.